Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I'm your host, and I am honored once again by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show takes you to those places where you have those mastermind meetings and aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least move you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. We're a mastermind type format where you can imagine yourself being that third person at the table as ideas freely flow. And I urge you to get out your pad of paper and two pens. That's two pens because one always fails you, falls, or gets grabbed and run off with by the cat. And be prepared for something that may make something of a difference. Perhaps the answer to a question you didn't even know to ask yet. Today, we're going to be covering something that's very near and dear to my heart. If you want to lead in business, the customer comes first. This is a theory that I have practiced in my own business for almost 20 years. And basically, what you're going to gain today is sort of a blueprint for building a customer-driven enterprise that will allow you to gain and maintain relevancy in a crowded marketplace. As I say in the literature for our podcast reach system, there is absolutely nothing new under the sun whatsoever. What makes your business, your brand, and your offering special are two things: you, yourself, and what you bring to it, your own unique experiences, your background, your own truth, and your relationship with your customers. To guide us through this today, we have with us Greg Kjellstrom, who I've been looking forward to speaking with for a while now. He is the author of a book called House of the Customer. He's a best-selling author, speaker, entrepreneur, and currently an advisor and consultant to top companies on marketing technology, customer experience, and digital transformation initiatives as principal and chief strategist of GK5A. He is also the host of the Agile Brand with Greg Kjellstrom podcast. He has worked with some of the world's top brands, including Adidas, Choice Hotels, Coca-Cola, which if Elon Musk buys it, he promises to put the cocaine back in, which sounds like fun, Dell, FedEx, HP, Marriott, MTV, Starbucks, Toyota, and VMware. House of the Customer is Greg's 11th book. So this is somebody who has about 9.5 books out, more than me. I better get cranking and get caught up. Greg Kjellstrom, come on in. Weather's fine.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I just read off your official bio. This is so impressive. I'm pretty sure I'm not worthy to be here. And this is my show. So what we like to do here before we dive in, and I know you have some great points you are asking us to cover, and we're going to get all those in because they're fantastic. Tell us in your own words a bit about your journey and what's brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Yeah, sure. So I started out my career as I come from a design background. So I started out as a web designer back in the day in the late 90s, early 2000s. I held the title webmaster. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore, but I did that, became head of product design at a startup back in the day. And then shortly after that, like so many startups in the early 2000s, it's no longer around anymore, but I learned a lot from the team that I worked for and met a lot of great people doing it. But it also kind of encouraged me to not want to get another job working for other people. And so I started freelancing. Right after that, became busy enough and successful enough as a freelancer that I decided you know, either I have to start turning customers away because I just don't, I can't do it all myself, or maybe there's something here and maybe start a company and partner with some people and things like that. And so I started what became a digital marketing and digital experience agency and ended up running it for about 14 years until I sold it about 6 years ago at this point. And so, you know, we got to work with some great brands, some of the ones that you mentioned. I worked for the company that acquired the agency for a little bit. And then I struck back out on my own and did a few things. I started writing books. I started writing a little bit before that, but started writing books and doing more speaking and things and continuing my work as a consultant. Although now I could really just focus on working as part of sometimes part of larger teams, but really just focusing on being a subject matter expert in certain areas. And, you know, I've had the fortune to be able to work with some really amazing brands and amazing teams since then.
You know, one thing you mentioned, I haven't heard the word webmaster in years. And I'll tell you, if I never hear that word again, it will be too damn soon. My first 100% full-time entrepreneurial venture was managing a web development firm, and every client wanted to call me their webmaster. And what does that usually mean? And you may chuckle at this a little bit. It means you are the absolute hero who comes in and saves the day when you know which switch to flip that saves everybody like 20 hours of time. But God forbid you take 2 hours off on Christmas Day.
Right. Uh-huh. Knowing to close the caret in the HTML code that was left open or something like that. And yeah, it's lots of reward, but not necessarily the funnest of jobs.
we were also the ones who looked out for our clients' interests. So when they went through their succession of marketing gurus who wanted to do all these things, install these scripts, and make all kinds of changes, we were the ones who got to develop the very popular message of, no, that'll crash our server. You can't have one.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, you remember, yeah. remember those days? So, So one of the fortunate things I've seen is I got out of that business when I became a website conversion consultant, back when website conversions was actually really a separate discipline about 12 years ago. And I was so delighted to move away from that other thing. And what I've seen today, and it's kind of interesting how a couple of your pieces of work have come together, and my cats were fighting there, you now think of the so-called webmaster role, or the quote-unquote webmaster role, as being something that your digital marketing agency performs for you. The website is no longer really, to me, the be-all and end-all, though it's a very critical part of your presence. In our podcast reach system, our clients get dedicated websites just for their podcast for a plethora of reasons that are beyond this conversation. But part of the reason I got out of web development is that business model attracted clients who treated the website as the be-all and end-all because that's how they had been programmed to do it. Meanwhile, social media was already a thing. So it's interesting how we evolve with the times. And what I'm really excited about is having this conversation with you about the customer experience and how by leading in business, you put the customer first. So there are a number of questions you wanted me to cover here. We may go through them in a random order. We may go through them in an obvious order. Our listeners know that we do hit everything we need to. And sometimes we do it just however things happen. So let's start with question number one. Now, you mentioned in your writings and teaching some factors that drive businesses need to transform to be more customer centric. So let's lay some groundwork and tell me what's going on there.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's happening is customers have an increasing amount of choice, right? So there's not just a few choices for any products or services. There's hundreds in some cases, and the experience that customers are used to in one area sets their expectations for the customer experience in another. So, you know, one example here is Amazon, you know, doing next day shipping, right? So great idea and yet, you know, so many businesses that didn't do that or weren't doing that before, now all of a sudden there's this expectation when I buy something online, no matter where I am, what I'm buying, I'm going to get it next day because Amazon does it. So, you know, it that in that case, one experience sets an expectation everywhere that you go. And yeah, when you think about that, when you think about the ability to customize a car that you buy online or a product that you buy, like all of these experiences adding up to consumers have more choice. They have the ability to get things when, where, how they want it. And all of that adds up to just these increasing demands and increased competition, where brands, one of the key competitive differentiator, as well as the main points of competition, is the customer experience these days. That's over product quality, over how timely things get, new releases come out. It's what is the experience that I'm going to have when I buy this product or service?
Right. Well, couple points. I'm going to say four words: cars, clothes, computers, and couches. What do those four things have in common?
You got to help me out here.
Four things I will not buy online sight unseen.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I don't care. These are things I have to touch. The clothes I have to try on, the computer I have to play with, the car I have to test drive, the computer, which one did I do? Yeah, the couch I have to sit on. There's never going to be a substitute for that. Now, along with this same day, next day shipping, there's also the hassle-free return. You know, like you just send it back within a certain amount of time. But I can tell you that a month ago, due to unforeseen circumstances, I had to buy a brand new laptop. It happened because my main laptop, the keyboard just decided to quit working. It's under warranty, so I'm getting it fixed, but I could not be even half a day without a computer. And my backup, the battery somehow went shot on it, so I'd have to use AC power all the time. So at 7 o'clock, Best Buy's going to close at 8 o'clock. I run over to Best Buy. I hit all kinds of ridiculous road construction. I barely make it. I walk in the door, go to the computer section, find the same laptop that I have, just, well, the updated version of it because it's 2 years later. And I hail down the nearest employee and I say, you have a guaranteed sale here as soon as you're done with the other customer, get me this one.
Yeah.
And yeah. Now going back to your point, I like the idea that I can walk into a place and what I want is right there. And what we're seeing with some of this just in time and so much being sold online, sometimes there's not even a floor model available. Like if they didn't have that particular laptop in the box, I would have taken the display model and paid the $100 less. I mean, what happens to a display model? They turn it on a few times, big whoop. I mean, right. Yeah, it's like nothing. It's like buying a 6-day-old car. Somebody else ate the depreciation. So, right. I mean,
well, yeah, but I think what you're talking about here. So, you know, for instance, for me, I have no problem buying clothes online sight unseen because I hate clothes shopping. Like I'll do anything to not have to walk into a store and try clothes on. So I think, you know, what you're touching on here is that not only is there more choice and greater expectations, there's also people that have very, very different preferences and very, very different needs. I mean, your need of your computer dying. I had a similar enough thing. My computer was, it was a longer dying process, you could say, but I bought, you know, I ordered a computer as soon as I could, but I didn't, you know, I didn't go in a store. I just ordered it online. So, you know, there's different preferences and needs and stuff like that. And that's another thing that's what makes it hard for brands is they need to have, to your point, they need to have stuff in stock, but they also need to have it be able to ship overnight. And they also have to have people in a retail environment that can answer questions, but also I prefer doing like live chat. I'm probably crazy, but like I prefer live chat over phone any day of the week. And you know, there's people that will only pick up the phone and call. So you know, all of these, you know, multi-channel, omni-channel is the end goal of what brands really need to be, which is everywhere, with a consistent experience all at once. But I mean, I think what you're touching on here is there's no one way to do customer experience anymore. It's you've got to meet your customers wherever they are.
Yeah. I don't like clothes shopping either, but my look at it is a little bit different. About a year and a half ago, I did a very intense personal branding experience, which involved working with a certified brand consultant to determine my color palettes and all sorts of measurements that we don't even think about when we're thinking about our clothes. So when I go clothes shopping, I carry with me actual color swatches. I'm going to compare clothes that I see there to make sure that it's the correct shade of purple or the correct shade of charcoal and all the other colors in my primary color range. I'm what's known as an autumn when it comes to, for those of you who understand the seasonal color profiles of people's complexions. Furthermore, I mentioned all those measurements that were done on me. You know which measurement that she did not do?
What?
My waist.
Huh.
Would you believe that waist size doesn't matter? What matters is the fit. So you go into a store and you say, oh, I'm a 36. Are you really a 36? Because in one brand, you might be a 40. In another size, you might be a 34. We're looking for the fit. We're looking for the band to come up to where the actual waist is, which is different than what we're often taught in school. And it's also different based on each person's physiology and anatomy. Right. I could go on and on and on, but you're getting the idea of how I ain't buying it online.
So I only wear black and gray, so that probably helps. Just being partially colorblind, I don't even bother with color. So
yeah. I also have one of those capsule wardrobes that is 10 pieces of the old 23 combinations.
Right.
Nice. Yeah. When I moved last year, my entire wardrobe fit in one suitcase. It was very nice.
Nice.
Yeah. So those are a couple of the things that we need to think about with the customer experience. And in my view, is customer centric can mean different things to different folks. So what goals can business aspire to in order to maintain their competitive advantage, particularly knowing there's this omnivariate expectation of what the customer experience is?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things that I go through in the book, and I call these North Star goals. And it, you know, to me, that means they're not immediately achievable by even, you know, I work with everyone from Fortune 100 brands to smaller organizations, and it's tough regardless of the size of the company. But the first one is really what we were touching on just now, which is this one-to-one omni-channel personalized customer experience. So, you know, everyone can interact with the brand on their channel of choice, get what they need when they need it, where they need it. The second would be that brands need to have what I call a first party data strategy. And this is that brands really understand their customers. They own the data that they use about their customers themselves. They don't farm it out to third parties. There's a lot of reasons why. We can talk about third-party cookie deprecation and all that stuff if we really want to, but you know, suffice to say, it's going to get a lot harder to use third-party data sources to advertise in about, you know, 12 to 18 months, and it's not necessarily always the most efficient way to do it even now. So brands need to own the data about their customers that they have. The flip side, or sort of the inverse of that, is data privacy is not only becoming a much greater concern with consumers, because anyone that's alive has had their information, some platform they've used has been hacked and data stolen. And, you know, how many times over at this point has this happened? So, and as well as the regulations from, you know, in the EU, it's GDPR. California has some guidelines that went into place recently. Even, you know, other states, like I'm in Virginia, there's some regulations that are going through here and other states in the US. Those data privacy concerns are becoming more and more prevalent as well. So it's this idea of, you know, we as customers, we want brands to know and understand and personalize and give us everything that we want. And yet we also don't want them to mess with our data and get hacked and all those other things. So the first party data strategy just that's my shorthand for that. Third thing is building a customer lifetime value model, which is let's new customer acquisition always important. It's never going to not be important, but it's anyone that has ever done sales knows, and I've been doing it for a couple decades now, it's so much easier to keep an existing customer than it is to win a new one. And this lifetime value model, that's what this is built on, is let's build customer loyalty. Let's do things like subscription models and other things that build retention in and really grow. And the, you know, that's the third goal. And then the last one has to do with the internal culture of the organization, which is
right
to actually build being customer centric and agile, whether it's, I'm a agile certified coach and went through Scrum Master training, all that stuff. I don't mean everybody has to do that and everybody has to be what I call big A agile, but every company has to be nimble and they have to be customer centric. And it starts with leaders, but it's got to be driven by the employees.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned agile and lean. And I know the definitions of a lot of these words. And one of my many things that I dabble in, I do some work in the change management field due to who one of my clients are. And, you know, I believe that a lot of what we do experience when it comes to the customer experience really boils down to being both lean and agile, particularly when we're talking about this same day delivery, next day delivery. Now, going back real quickly before I raise my next point here, the other thing I was going to mention earlier is that Amazon same day service doesn't mean the same thing to me as it does to everybody else. You know what it means to me? It means amateur drivers who can't figure out how to go to a UPS store that's open and say, here's a package for your customer who has his mailbox here. Can you sign for it? So many times I've been told nobody was home. Meanwhile, it's a business address. Nobody was home at the house. That was written down. And they said so at 4:30 when I happen to know that my UPS store is open till 7 because they just either failed to manage your schedule or didn't feel like delivering it. Another thing I associate with these Amazon drivers is how many times I've had to tell them to move their van because they're blocking my car in when I had to go somewhere. So to me, some of that stuff feels like amateur hour, and I would rather wait 2 days and have a solid tracking number with a company that is statistically highly likely to just deliver it on time, whatever that means.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's different preferences from, I think some people just want the idea of that it would show up quickly over. I would imagine, I don't know the stats here or even if they exist, but you know, how many people that ask for things next day delivery actually need them next day delivery, right? It's more just the idea that it exists. So why wouldn't I do that? You know, there's environmental concerns, you know, of like, do you really need one thing to show up tomorrow and the other two things to show up 2 days later? Like, why don't you just save some cardboard packaging and get them all at once? But it's, you know, I think, again, it goes back to once customers see something, they get it in their heads that, you know, that's the way that things should be. And they have this expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. So just my own mindset, and I contribute that just so from the mastermind perspective, we can see that there are different approaches. I'm going to go back to when I moved to a new apartment back last December. I scheduled the delivery of the couch. I scheduled the delivery of like two or three other things to all happen on the same day. And I staggered the appointments so that it was like only one day I absolutely had to hang out. I got one in, then they left. I got the next one in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And most of this happened on about like my fourth or fifth day living here. I didn't care that I didn't have a couch the first day I moved in as much as I cared about the convenience of only having to spend one day on that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so again, again, it really comes down to different strokes for different folks. Now, you mentioned data and third-party cookie deprecation and some of these things that are really, I don't know if they're direct descendants or leftovers from this whole GDPR thing that we were all so aghast and a flutter over a few years ago. But you've raised the point that brands have struggles and as well as opportunities staying competitive where we are now, particularly with new pending legislation coming up and regional roles that are going to cause variances in business operations, where you have both that one-on-one personalized experience that you need data to be able to deliver, and at the same time, increased consumer data privacy. Now, I don't know if this is applicable to this or not, because I don't know the industry, but I'm thinking of if you travel frequently and you usually stay at one chain of hotel, they keep in their database all of your preferences. So whenever you check in there, no matter where you are, they know what snacks you want in there. They know if you want the air conditioner turned on. They know if you want the TV turned on into what channel and things like that. So we may not be talking about the same thing, but there is this thing where you need the data to do the personalized experience. And now, legally, it's harder to gain or maintain the data. What do we do?
Yeah, so I think there's certain industries, and you mentioned the travel and hospitality industry. Certain industries have a leg up on others because they have been doing, you know, when I'm a Marriott Rewards member, so, you know, I get late checkout or a higher floor number or whatever when I check in, because they know my preferences and stuff like that. So because they have direct access to me, because they've built a customer loyalty program that incentivizes me to give them my preferences and things like that. Other brands have not traditionally been in that position. So, you know, if you are a company that produces like food products or consumer packaged goods, and you're selling generally through a Target, Walmart, some kind of intermediary, your direct contact with customers traditionally did not exist. You were reliant on that retailer to really, you know, display your products properly and sell them. And so there was this disconnect. And so in order for you to advertise to what you believed your customers were, you didn't own any customer data unless someone filled out a registration card, you know, in a product. But, you know, who's filling out registration cards for a box of tissues or, you know, a can of soda or something like that? And so these brands would have to go to third-party brokers of data to say, okay, I think my customers live in these regions and are between these ages and maybe are interested in these things. And so target people like that, because I bet they're buying my product. All of a sudden, with the data regulations that are going on, as well as Google is the last to really move on this, but Google getting rid of this idea where third-party companies can track you throughout the web and share and collect data about you without your consent. Without that, it's nearly impossible for these brands to target anyone, because the companies that have been collecting this information, they have to change the way that they understand customers and things like that. So that's why, you know, these consumer packaged goods or other companies like that have to all of a sudden build some kind of relationship with their end customers where they just hadn't before. And it's a huge change for some companies. Again, for the hotel companies or airlines or others, they've been doing it for years. Maybe their advertising budget needs to shift or change or something, but it's really those others that are massively affected.
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, and it just comes to mind. I'm having some memory, and I may be off by a point or two here, but for some reason, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, my dad needed to borrow $150 from me. I don't know what it was about, but I know that I had my stash of my money for my first communion, which was actually, by the standards of that day, pretty substantial. So I loaned him the $150. And when I handed it to him, I said, can I have this back in $150? And for some reason, it just comes back to me how shocked I was when he said, sure, absolutely, I'll give you $150 when I get it for you on Friday. And sure enough, he handed me a $100 bill and a $50 bill. So I'm wondering, and this might come up through hypnotherapy, why that was so shocking to me that I could ask for something and actually get it. It's really weird. So, and I'm just thinking, there's so many other instances of me in my life asking for something and being surprised when I actually got it. And maybe that speaks to customer experience, and people get so jaded with their customer experience that when they actually get what they asked for, it's surprising. I'm reminded of another story that's actually a little bit funny here. This is not political. I'm just saying what happened. There was this guy who rented a room at one of the Trump hotels. And in his request, he asked them to make sure that he walked in the room that he saw a portrait of Hillary Clinton. So, son of a gun, and he was some kind of journalist or blogger or something. He wrote about it. He said, son of a gun, when I walked in there, there was a picture of Hillary Clinton, and it was actually very tastefully done. He showed a picture of it. I mean, he did a nice job with it. And see, here's how I look at that. He's the paying customer, and if that one little gesture, even if you just say, ha, 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 okay, well, then we're on record as saying we take really great care of our guests.
Right.
And we indulge these little things. So I don't know if maybe they put him in some database, and then every time he checked into one of their hotels, he saw that same picture again. But being able to know little things like that about your customer, I think, are very helpful. And with some of my clients, what I've learned just over the years, my clients and their clients, is just knowing these little idiosyncratic facts has helped them with their customer retention immensely, just because it shows a personal touch of saying, hey, I know you, you're a real human being.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a fundamental level, everyone wants to be seen and heard and understood and have a little empathy. I mean, some people maybe more than others, but I think everybody wants that. And it's, I think overall brands are becoming more attuned to those. Obviously, a lot of them have a long ways to go, but I think with COVID and things just needing to change really overnight, I think there's been a lot of changes in the way that customer experience is delivered, and just even how we look at each other as coworkers and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely it little things can mean big, a big difference.
Yeah. So what are some brands you know of that are leading the way right now in this personalized customer experience arena, and how do they stand up against what you may know of some of the laggards? And if for some reason you don't want to say a company name, just say the industry.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's some brands that I work with, and there's some that I can't really talk about too much, but I think there's overall trends. And, I mentioned the hospitality industry, and, they're ones that, again, in some ways they've had an unfair advantage because they've had so much data about their customers for so long. I mentioned Marriott already, like they built customer loyalty programs before that was, now it's kind of the de facto standard of companies trying to do this stuff. But, so a lot of these companies have had a leg up for a while, but, we're seeing a lot of gains in areas like financial services is one where, I mean, man, I've got so many bad anecdotes about calling up a bank and having to share my account information 10 different times to get service. And yet there's a handful of brands in financial services that are starting to really get it and really take steps to make things easier and better and work around all of those challenges. So, there's an industry where I would say just historically bad customer experience, but it's getting so much better among some of the category leaders. And that this is extending elsewhere, even healthcare, another one, very hard, these highly regulated industries, that's also kind of a hallmark of, man, there's going to be some issues with sharing information between even people at the same company. So that's why sometimes there's some of these disconnects. But yeah, I think overall, and the statistics prove this, like overall customers are growing more satisfied with companies because I think they're having to be more competitive in these areas, and they're having to pay more attention to their customers because they know it's not enough to just be there. I mean, decades ago, there was three products on the shelf for each category, and all you really needed to do was be recognized and have logo or recognition in a TV ad or a radio spot or something. Now, like that just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. Speaking of the banks, and I've written articles about this, going to my bank to take a long romantic walk to the bank, you know, deposit a check, and you get there and there's a long line. So you have two tellers working, and then you have three other people that are going up and down the line, asking people over and over and over again, what are you here for? How can we help you? Trying to get them out of line to use the ATM. Now, for example, you had the, I remember one case, the grandma who came in, who was organizing cash presents for her grandchildren for Christmas. Now she needed, I think $50 or something like that, if I remember correctly. And they said, oh, well, you can use the ATM right there. And she said, no, I give my children $2 bills. The $2 bills are up at the counter. Your ATM does not give me $2 bills. So, okay, can't get her out of line. Then there is the person who has a handwritten check. And they'll say, well, did you know that we have an app? And it's like, yeah, your app doesn't read handwritten checks. Well, lo and behold, I have a copy of that article is on one of my websites, and it's on my list to go back and edit it, because that bank that I use for my personal banking has made some upgrades. They have upgraded their ATMs. They've upgraded their mobile app so that you can either take a picture or feed in a handwritten check, and you have a 99.something% chance of it actually being able to read your handwriting and give you the correct amount. And if it, and the best part is on the ATMs, if it doesn't read the correct amount, you can manually override. I mean, you're responsible if the check bounces, right, but you can, if you know it's a $500 check, if you try and type in 5,000, that check's probably going to bounce unless you have 5,000 in your account. Besides, it's illegal to take money for an amount other than what the check was written for. Right. So you take that in your hands. But the fact is they resolve that. So it's really cool is those long romantic walk to the banks are now short drives to the nearest ATM.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm putting hours back in my life every month. And, yeah, and to me, that's a response to demand. They don't want the long lines. They also don't want to hire more tellers. We're in an app and technology world where people would love to just pull out their phone, take a picture of the check, hit a button, and voila, it's deposited.
Yeah, I mean that's all I do anymore is mobile deposit. And I used to make an event out of going to the bank to deposit checks and stuff back in the day, because it was always like a, you know, it was good news getting a check for my business or whatever. But uh-huh. Yeah, now it's like, yeah, just it's a 2-minute thing. And yeah, you know, the technology here and there, sometimes it can be challenging, but it's worth it, because it, to your point, it gives us hours back in our day that, and that bank or that institution is doing that for us. I mean, the other thing here is just, there are other fintech disruptors and competitors, and, you know, it's not even just banks anymore. And younger generations and more digital savvy people are open to non-traditional bank solutions. And so, you know, yeah, they've got to keep up. I mean, this is where competition is a good thing.
Yeah. And you have virtual banks now that don't have branches, but they've replicated all the functions of the ATM in your phone. The only thing you can get cash. You can just go to another ATM and pay the $3 fee, but they don't need branches anymore, because they've automated and electronicized everything you would need to go to that branch for. And those are pretty cool, particularly if you need a bank just to have a place to put money to cover all your recurring monthly bills.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So now, what role does leadership in a company play in creating this customer first, employee driven brand? And be careful how you answer this, because I might go on a rant.
No worries. Yeah, I mean, you know, so I think leaders, there's, you know, you, if you go to a company and you ask them, you know, are customers important here and you value your customers, what leader is going to say no, they aren't important, right? So, or they have stuff on their walls that say how they love their customers, or, you know, it's like the dry cleaner hangers that say we love our customers on. I always picture that in my head for some reason, but What really matters, though, is what gets done and what gets prioritized. And so, you know, leaders say, yes, this is, customers are important, but time and time again, when they prioritize things that don't put the customer first, then, you know, they're doing a couple things. I mean, one, they're shortchanging their customers, which that is a short-term fix to, you know, to a potential problem with customer retention and all this, you know, all that stuff's going to tank eventually. The other part of it is that they're setting a bad example for their employees. You know, if they want to have a customer-centric organization, they need to lead by example. And it sounds so obvious saying it, but, you know, in practice, it's like, again, I've seen this so many times of just, I've seen the PowerPoints and the all hands meetings and all the stuff, the rah-rah.
All hands, you know, meetings, here we go.
Right, right. But it's like, what really matters, and I will just say it's the prioritization of efforts. And that's really all that matters. That ends up becoming the culture of the organization, is what gets prioritized over what.
Yeah. In my book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, there's a subsection about an awful web hosting company. So when I first got into the whole web development business, when I was a webmaster, the idea of actually getting good hosting was, believe it or not, a premium sort of thing. So I had a relationship with this one company. It was a smaller web hosting company based right here in the United States. And they had remarkable customer service. It was like, I couldn't believe it myself how good it was. And so I had about 40 or 50 customers in that firm, and most of them ended up with this hosting company. And if somebody came to me saying, well, I don't have hosting, it's like, I got hosting for you. Yeah. So I got a lot of those $50 referral fees, and I had a lot of people on this company. Well, they got bought out, then they got bought out again. And then they had the overseas owners, and then they were folded into a conglomerate, and they didn't maintain things, and they were marketing something they specifically called WordPress hosting, except it constantly crashed. Like their damn Apache servers were probably being run by a little ant trying to run a treadmill. It was constantly shutting down. And every time I had the live chat, they would say, oh, well, your WordPress websites are the problem. The WordPress shut it down. It's like, this is WordPress hosting.
Right.
And so they would push their little button. They would start their Apache, because God forbid they just give me the button, the Apache. I don't know how to push a button. I know how to gentle reboot and forcefully reboot. I know a lot of stuff. I know WHMs and cPanels and Plesk and all that stuff. I'm not a tyke. So what I think happened, I cover this in my book, is their servers were going to hell. In fact, this company, there's actually a Wikipedia article about a server crash they had. It was that bad.
Wow.
I'm almost revealing the name of the company, but for somebody who was around 10 years ago, their servers crashed because their fire extinguishers went off for no reason, even though there wasn't a fire. And their entire company was shut down for like 5 days while they dried out the servers because, lo and behold, their redundancies failed. Yay. Okay. So now we know that their servers are a bunch of crap. So even before that happened, you can imagine the people in tech support going to middle management and saying, hey, you know, here are the trends in our tickets. Here are the trends in our chats. Here are the trends in our emails. We keep hearing about this Apache issue. We keep hearing about this alleged plugin overload, but they're not running that many plugins. So it's ridiculous. But in the meantime, senior management may have told middle management that they're not going to fix the servers. You just have to find a way to deal with this. So middle management delivers a message to the tech, say, well, you know how it is with these people who think they know WordPress. They'll tell you that they don't overload with plugins, but it's a bunch of bullshit. They don't know what they're doing. So it's the customer's fault. Now, the tech getting no backup from their management whatsoever, how soon do you think they're going to get tired of their job? And that's going to reflect in the quality, tone, and attitude of the service they give to their customers.
Right, right.
I mean, have you ever heard of somebody who's actually a very nice, kind, empathetic person being really shitty to a customer just as a way to get back at their bosses who aren't backing them up? And that's actually that rep saying, without using the words, leave here, you're better off elsewhere.
Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah. It's kind of, it maybe that's a last resort for you know, this, all of this stuff is so connected, and you know, leadership and the employee experience is connected, but as you're saying right now, the employee experience and the customer experience are connected, and it's not just direct, you know, those frontline employees, whether they're phone support or, you know, a server in a restaurant. And, you know, those are easy examples to give, but the employee experience matters so much. I mean, how many times have you used a web app where you're just like, who designed this uh-huh. interface? They must not have never actually had to solve the problem that I'm trying to solve with the product that they made. Right.
Right.
Like, if you don't have empathy with your customers, and if you're not motivated and to try to solve problems in a real way, like there's a problem. And again, that leaders need to inspire and motivate their employees in a way to really see purpose in their job that can translate to customers getting what they want. I think there can be a virtuous cycle of employees are motivated by creating a great customer experience, and they're rewarded when they deliver it. Like that's in some places, some people listening to this may think that sounds like science fiction, but it's true. It can really happen if you do it right, but it takes leaders to really lead the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So in your book, which I'm going to introduce to our listeners here in a few minutes when we wrap up, believe it or not, we're coming to an end already. Time really flies. Your book is called House of the Customer, and that's a term that you like to use. So let's, again, define terms. What is a house of the customer, and why is it helpful to think of building the customer experience in this, using this particular analogy or metaphor?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote the book because I wanted to do two things really at the same time. And one is I wanted to outline those North Star goals that I talked about already, and just kind of talk at a high level and say, this is what we need to be striving for. But admittedly, those North Star goals, they're a little jargony, and there's a lot of marketing terminology and a lot of background that you kind of have to have in order to really understand and know how to get there. And so the other part of it, because I have a pragmatic part of me too, is I wanted to show, and this is based on some of my experience being hands-on. I'm a consultant and advisor, but I also roll up my sleeves and do the work as well alongside other team members. And I had the fortune to be able to work on a couple of very large projects for some pretty large brands over the last couple of years. And this is based on this. I wanted to share what I learned not to do, as well as what to do. And I thought the best way to do it is, you know, when you think of these goals that we're striving towards, they're very big, and it can get kind of esoteric and just hard to kind of tease apart. So I use the metaphor of a house, and I divide it into, you know, the roof, the foundation, the pillars, the walls. Just there's seven parts of this house of the customer that we can then pick apart piece by piece and say, okay, are we strong here? Do we have gaps? And there may be some areas where you're already strong as an organization. Like the roof, for instance, is the processes and the systems that kind of guide everything. And so, you know, you may have a very organized organization and culture, and so you're on top of that, but you're lacking in the customer data that you have, which is the understanding and listening to the customer. And so by teasing it apart in this way, and by using this metaphor of the house, I feel like it's a lot easier to wrap your head around, okay, where are the areas of strength, but also where are the areas of weakness? And I give a framework and a maturity tool that can actually help you measure that in those different areas as well.
Yeah, certainly. And I love the analogy of a house, because think about how I'm an apartment dweller myself by enthusiastic choice, because I don't want to deal with a house. And plus, I don't know. I mean, I love Las Vegas, but what if I go somewhere else next year? I don't want to be saddled with some albatross. I mean, one of my cardinal values for my lifestyle is, hey, I don't like the neighborhood. I pick up and leave. I mean, it's that simple. That's what matters to me. Now I get to a point where maybe I have a family at some point and kids and what have you. Well, maybe then we do something a little more permanent. But for me right now, why would I buy a house? I mean, I've thought about buying a house to use as a rental property and monetize, but to live in one, No, I like the fact that if my hot water tank goes out, I make a phone call and 20 minutes later, they will another one in here. No charge to me, no trouble for me. That's what I like. So again, everybody's experience is different and it's centric to that individual customer. So we could even look at the apartment of the customer. So I got my living room, I got my bedroom, I got my giant Roman tub, I got my balcony, there's a swimming pool and a hot tub right across the way, and these are all components as well that serve different purposes. And so the thing
I have a follow-up book now, so
exactly. And so with all these things, you know, they're all components of the structure, they're all components of the whole, and without all those components not only in place but also synchronized and tandemized, the thing collapses.
I think it's a good framework to be able to understand not only the distinct pieces but also how they relate to one another and the roles that they play. And you know, there's pieces of it that relate directly to the customer, like the foundation is the customer centric culture that we were talking about earlier. The bookends, the walls, so to speak, are though the business strategy and goals and the business outcomes. And because, you know, we're any for-profit company, as much as we're saying that the customer experience is important, they also have to turn a profit, and they can't serve customers as well if they don't. So, you know, we tie all these things together though. So there's a place for the employees, there's a place for the customers, and there's also the things that a business needs to thrive.
Yeah. So I'd like to leave our listeners with something to think about, actually. So I want to take the mastermind beyond just me and you, and I want to take it to the listener who's also part of this conversation right now, observing with their pad of paper and two pens. There's a company called Twilio that last year released a report. And what that report determined is that although 75% of consumer-facing brands claim to have good or excellent personalized customer service, the report surveyed almost 3,500 consumers around the world and found that actually about 47-48% agree. So that's a quarter difference right there. What's going on with this gap? Why do companies think they're getting it right and their customers are saying something else? And what do we as entrepreneurs and business creators need to be on the lookout for as we move forward from our conversation here and go back to the things that we do to grow our brands and our businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with that report as well. And I think there's a few things going on. I mean, one is there's always this concept of an echo chamber where internal to the org where, okay, we're starting, because a lot of businesses like we've been saying, a lot of businesses have been doing customer experience, whatever they called it back in the day, but they've been doing this stuff for years, and so they have an internal concept of this. A lot of organizations are, I would say, newer to this idea. They've been marketing and they have a tech support team or a customer service team or something, but really tying all of this stuff together is a relatively new endeavor. And so some of these organizations are, well, you know, they're investing in it and they see their people are busy doing it, and so they must be doing a good job at it, right? But you know, in reality, there's a lot of internal talk and excitement and enthusiasm, which is certainly part of the equation, but it's not translating yet into the end customer experience. I think another factor here is with the massive change required in a lot of industries over, you know, COVID lockdowns and things like that, there was a lot of innovation that happened during those times, but there was a lot of also, I mean, you know, to use the bank example, if you were one of the most of the banks that didn't have online, you know, mobile check deposit and online branches and all that kind of stuff, I mean, you know, your experience all of a sudden tanked when your branches couldn't even be open and things like that. So, you know, I think some of it is actually good news in that so many companies are now actually paying attention to customer experience, but I just think they haven't quite caught up in their execution of it yet. And I say a hopeful yet with that, because
yeah,
I do think things are improving, but you know, there's always going to be room to grow.
Well, you know, and I believe that every cloud has a silver lining, and you should invest in the silver because it's the precious metal. And one of the silver linings of COVID was, I think it forced a lot of changes that were way too long in coming. The idea that there are people who really their jobs are not suited for 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, and especially not to work in some cube farm. And these companies for years resisted the whole work from home thing, citing any level of, you know, what I call excuses, but other people might call reasons, whatever floats your boat. I'm not going to debate that.
Right.
But then we come around March 2020, we get our declaration of national emergency, and these people hold on to the whole idea is that somehow subjecting people to a cube farm is good for team building and employee retention, you know, whatever. But yeah. Now they're being told, that's interesting you have those ideas. You will implement work from home or you will not do any commerce at all. There's no discussion here. And some right. companies saw the opportunity to revolutionize everything from how they handle their data, how they move their customer service to remote locations, even to their hiring process, because the hiring process, and I covered this in another conversation I had on the show recently, for a remote worker is different from the hiring process for somebody you expect to have come to your office. You have to ask them different questions and assess for different personality traits, different competencies, and different goals in order to effectively recruit a remote employee, or even somebody who's a hybrid employee who does sometimes at home, sometimes in the office. Now, beyond that, okay. What you just said, companies that had the ability to do things remotely, they had the e-commerce, they had the apps and everything else, were able to just, well, it wasn't the same as having people walk in their retail establishment, but they could keep going. They could keep delivering right. their service. And for some, they found that they could even do it more efficiently and improve the customer experience. I give the example of my long romantic walks to the banks, which would become my short drives to the nearest ATM. Do you really think I wanted to spend 20 minutes fighting traffic and then another 15 mm-hmm. minutes in line? No, I wanted the ability to just click a button or two and be done with it. I'll go to the bank when it's a valuable experience for me to go to the bank. Otherwise, I'm really taking up their time. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, again, there a lot of, I think we got a chance to look at a lot of the things that we were doing and kind of take a second look at some of the things that we were doing, you know, like pre-pandemic, I did a lot of coffee meetings and a lot of, you know, driving around to sit and uh-huh. talk with someone for 30, 45 minutes, something like that, and then driving all the way back. And, you know, here in outside the DC area here, traffic is no fun, much like
I've been there, done that.
Yep. So, you know, it's like, it's nice to see people, but at the same time, do I want to invest 3 hours into a 45 minute conversation when
no.
yeah I mean yeah. I'm a lot pickier about what I do, and my clients, you know, I'm a consultant, and you know, my clients aren't asking me to come in. A lot of my clients aren't local anyway, and so that wouldn't really be as big a deal, but I'm flying less to go on site because everybody else is working remotely, and so things are getting done, and they're getting done really efficiently, and there's less downtime. And you know, that is in itself is its own challenge of, you know, forcing yourself to take breaks and things like that, because back-to-back Zoom meetings can be exhausting, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I've also written articles about how webcams are the death of employee interaction.
Yeah.
because what happens with the webcam is now you have an incomplete feedback loop of body language combined with the suspense and angst that comes with being online in the first place, that it actually is for some people, and I definitely count myself one of them, more conducive to me to treat Zoom calls like a regular phone call.
I remember
I was part of a networking group, and they had started the thing, and the moderator said, they actually said to me, "We need you to turn your camera on." I said, "I don't need to." Like, well, it's an exit. Well, kick me then, because I wasn't going to do it. What happens is when you break that feedback loop, the verbals, the nonverbals, the body movements that indicate shifts in conversation that you get, like if you and I were sitting next to each other, would exist even whether we realize it or not, don't exist when you're staring straight into a camera, which is doing it, which with that monitor is doing its own wonders on your eyes and your, and giving you headaches and every other damn thing. But yeah, I mean, it's, and I think part of it is understanding not everybody wants to be on Zoom. Now, I'll tell you one thing I love, I absolutely love this, is I haven't had to endure some meet for coffee thing since the bug hit. Because to this day, we're 3 years into it. We're over 3 years since 15 days to slow the spread. The anniversary of that was just recently. Somebody says, "Hey, you want to meet for coffee?" You say, "Oh, I don't know, you know, COVID." And you know, the etiquette we have today is you don't argue when somebody says that.
Right.
And I think it's fantastic. Again, more silver linings. All right. So you got this fantastic book, and let me tell your listeners about it. Go to Greg's website. It's www.gregkilstrom.com. I'm going to spell that for you. GREGKIHLSTROM.com. Subscribe to the show, replay it, skip to this point, listen to it again, or just go to our website and look at the show notes. Go to that website, click where it says books in the menu. And one of the books you're going to see there, I think it's the one up at the top. If you're listening to this 3 years from now, Greg probably has five other books out by then. So just bear in mind, it's going to be dated in the year 2028. But right now you're going to see the bestseller, House of the Customer, a blueprint for one-on-one customer first employee-driven business transformation. It's available in many different formats on many of your favorite online retailers. At least as of right now, there is an option to get a signed copy from Greg. So check that out. I'm going to grab the book on Kindle myself because I love to get that slight edge. What we covered today was scratching the surface of the treasure trove you're going to find inside that book, House of the Customer by Greg Kilstrom. And with that, Greg, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.